Welcome to Red Leg Nation Radio, your home for discussion and analysis of Cincinnati Reds baseball all year long. Now here's your host, Chad Dotson.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Red Leg Nation Radio. This is episode number 217 of the World's Most Dangerous Podcast. Joining me again this week, your friend and mine, the godfather of Red Leg Nation Radio, Bill Lack. How are you today, Bill?
Well, sometimes you got to make them an offer they can't refuse.
There we go. We're going to be talking about those offers you can't refuse at the trade deadline here in a little while. But let's lead it off with the news of the week, which is, well, the Reds are playing well. We'll talk about that some. Continuing to play relatively well in some respects. And but this week, the National League All-Star team was announced. And back when the Reds were 3-18, we thought they may have to, you know, just change the rules so that no Reds got into the All-Star game. But as it turns out, three Reds were named to the National League roster, and two of whom are first-time All-Stars. And I'm a sucker for All-Star talk, so we're going to lead off with that just quickly. Obviously, Joey Votto made it for the sixth time. And two guys that are making it for their first time, Scooter Gennett and Eugenio Suarez. You know, I'm happy for those guys making it for their first time. That's exciting stuff. I'm especially happy for Eugenio, who just... there's nothing to dislike about that guy, as far as I can tell.
He's a hell of a player. He's turned into a hell of a player. He's making their signing of him to the contract look very good right now.
Oh my goodness, looks fantastic. When we sort of write the book about this rebuild, that's going to be a chapter by itself. Because if he keeps playing like this, the kid's just 26 still, and they've got him under control for 7 years. Oh my goodness, it's just a fantastic, fantastic move by the front office, and so. That's exciting stuff. Watch the All-Star game. Glad Joey was voted in by his peers, which was good. He's not having his best year. He's having a good year. But glad to see him recognized because he's Joey.
I'm not sure he's the most, and without, I couldn't tell you who would have been a better candidate at first base, but you know, here's one thing I'll tell you about Joey. I'll bet you he hits better in the second half than he did in the first half.
He always seems to, and you know, this year he's leading the league in on base percentage. So I mean, it's not like he's having a bad year.
Oh no! That, no,
just not a Votto year.
It was funny. I have an old friend that lives in Cleveland, and I mean, I feel real bad for her just for that. But she was saying, you know, she said on the other night, posted during the game, said that Joey Votto is so overrated. I said, "Hun, you're really showing your ignorance."
He's underrated, if anything, right?
I said, the guy's a future Hall of Famer, and by the time he retires, he's going to be the greatest Reds hitter in history. And that encompasses some pretty good ball players.
Oh, yeah. He may already be that. You can make an argument anyway, but certainly by the time he's done.
Yeah.
Just astounding. Someone tweeted the other day about Votto, and we could spend an hour just loving on Joey Votto. We're not going to do that. We're going to move on to some other things. But someone tweeted the other day about Votto, said, if you look him up, look up the all-time leaders for on-base percentage in the history of baseball. It's like Joey Votto and Barry Bonds and then a bunch of guys who look like they charged up San Juan Hill. They all got black and white photos on Baseball Reference. It's crazy that he's one of the best hitters, you know, post-World War II anyway, in terms of on-base percentage. And people don't really realize he's up there with those greats. We're talking Ted Williams and, you know, Rogers Hornsby. So just an incredible Babe Ruth, incredible career he's had. And he's still... good. And I'm like you. I think he's going to really, we've seen this before, he's going to explode in the second half. It's happened the last 3 years, and I would not be surprised at all. And if that happens, he's an MVP candidate.
Well, I think Suarez is an MVP candidate.
Yes, absolutely.
So,
well, I was planning, let me go ahead and just mention this because I was planning on talking about it later. But my piece at Cincinnati Magazine this week is about Eugenio Suarez, and it's entitled, the headline is, Suarez Already an Exclusive Company Among Reds Greats, which sounds crazy. But he's already, by the end of the season, I think he's going to be like in the top five in wins above replacement for any third baseman in the history of the franchise. You know, right now he's, it's crazy. Suarez is second in the league in slugging percentage, third in on-base percentage, fifth in home runs, sixth in batting average. He's first in a couple of these advanced metrics, WRC plus, weighted runs created plus, WOBA, weighted on base average, first in the National League in both of those, and leads the National League in RBIs, even though he's missed 16 games. It's just, to me, he is the MVP in the first half I don't know that anyone in the league has hit as well as him.
Yeah, but you're going to win the MVP playing for a team that started out 3-whatever.
Well, true, but Joey Votto came a hair of doing it last year. Of course, that's Joey Votto we're talking about.
Well, and that's not the – and who knows where the Reds are, you know, assuming they – you know, assuming may be a huge assumption that they continue to play well, you know, who knows, you know, how close they can get to 500.
Yeah, it's not, you know, they got to go like 40-30 or something the rest of the way. Yeah, absolutely not. So, you know, if they can move fourth place, third place, and if they do that, they're going to be playing a lot of good ball the rest of the way. I don't know. Now, is he going to keep hitting like this? Maybe. He's not hit like this before in his career, but on the other hand, he's just entering his prime. You know, he can be expected to. I didn't expect him to have this good of numbers, but anyway, I'm loving it. Love Eugenio Suarez. Happy for him. Happy for Scooter Jeanette. Absolutely deserves to be an all-star. Leading the league in batting average. Really exciting year. So, fun stuff. Something to watch during the Midsummer Classic.
Yep.
All right. So, the Reds have been playing well lately. And, you know, there have been some ups and downs. They lost 19-4. But the night before that, they put up 7 runs in the top of the ninth to grab a victory.
How much did Molly's ERA go up last night? Actually, his numbers weren't all that terrible. I mean, they're terrible, but I wasn't watching, and you know, and I clicked over and saw it was 14-0, and Molly looked like he was crying on the bench.
I believe
it. No, I'm serious. He looked like he had tears, I'm not trying to insult the young man or anything. I'm a big fan, but I assumed he had given up, you know, 12 runs or whatever. Of course, you know, again last night he didn't get a whole lot of help from his defense.
He did not. His ERA did go up from the low to mid threes up to 4.02 last night. So
that's recoverable, though.
Sure, absolutely. Hey, I got no problems with what Tyler Mahle's done this year. Not one problem.
But you know, the defense, especially the infield defense, has not been stellar.
No, and that's one thing you mentioned to me before we went on air. Especially the right side of that infield. It's, you know, we just talked about two all-stars, and they're both hitting incredibly well so far. But sort of brutal with the glove, right?
Well, and I don't think Suarez is playing as good defensively as he did last year. And I don't know whether – and you and I have talked about this before. I'm not a big believer in defensive metrics. I'm an eyeball guy when it comes to defense. Peraza makes me crazy.
Yeah.
He lets so many balls get by him to the outfield that he should at the very least knock down. And he fields so many balls off to the side that he should. Suarez did that the other night on that ball he dropped. He backhanded a ball, went to backhand a ball for absolutely no reason. It wasn't even hit hard. He could easily have gotten over in front of it and fielded it in front of him. Instead, he backhanded it and then dropped it. And when it was a ball, he was going to throw to the plate. You know, that's just bad fundamental stuff, you know. And I understand, you know, I know I'm sounding like the old guy that I am since I just had a birthday that ended in a zero. But, you know, the lack of fundamentals, you know, now I can say that because, you know, but I was a big fan of Pete Rose, and he swatted the ball in the out, you know, the Pete Rose in the outfield catch thing. And I can remember at least once when he did that and the ball went down and went out and bounced off the, you know. But there's no excuse for bad fundamentals, not at this level.
True, and you hope that someone's, you know, someone's telling them that. On the coaching staff. I don't know, you know. Peraza and Suarez, both the metrics, you know, treated Suarez very well last year. Peraza this year, he's not an elite defender, but the metrics look pretty good. But I believe in, you and I have had this discussion since episode 1, probably, of Red Leg Nation Radio. And here we are in episode 217. And you've always said, I don't trust those metrics. And, you know, I trusted them. I took them with a grain of salt, always have. But I thought, you know, it's at least some data that can give us some idea. I'm not going to, you know, quote them as the definitive be-all, end-all, but I'm starting to change my mind on that as well, because I'm not sure these metrics are accounting sufficiently for all these shifts that are going on, and how does that account? And I read a piece this week, can't remember where it was, just that said the shifts are absolutely screwing up all the defensive numbers. So, you know, I don't know what to believe. I do know that Suarez has looked with the eye. He's not looked as good as last year. The metrics do bear that out somewhat. Peraza has had times where I thought he looked incredible. He's had times where he looked like he doesn't know what he's doing. We talked about Peraza, Jason Linden and I, on the last podcast, and I think that he's doing some really good things with the bat. And
come a long way.
He's come a long way. He really has. And I'm not ready to give up on him yet. But But I agree with you.
Can't give a kid when he's 24.
No, no. Well, that's something you and I talked about, that when Barry Larkin was 24, he made 29 errors at shortstop. Now, I'm not saying Jose Peraza is going to be Barry Larkin. Matter of fact, I will tell you definitively, Jose Peraza is not going to be Barry Larkin. But he does have to prove that he can stick shortstop defensively, because that's, you know, that's if he can, I think his bat may play well enough to keep him there. So, and that'll cause a real log jam in the Reds infield if he does prove that.
Yeah, well, it gives them other opportunities or decisions to make.
Right. Too many good players is a good problem to have.
That's a problem you always want to have.
Yeah, so it's not a bad thing at all to have that log jam. And it's one fewer spot maybe that you have to fill, and it's you know, one more guy that you have available maybe to trade to help you know, fill a pitching staff or something. You know, it's I don't know. It's pretty exciting actually to watch what's happened with the infield, or not just the infield, but with the Reds offense this year, and chance of having some guys that can be around for a while who can maintain this level of success, and or have guys behind them that can step in and you think be able to replace them. So it's an exciting time for the offense. I want to move to the pitching for a moment, though, Bill Lack, because this is going to be a fun discussion. Reds general manager Nick Kroll, I will say off the top here, I've spoken to Nick Kroll, and I am I like the guy. I think he's incredibly smart. I really do. I think he's very much open to analytics. But he announced this week that Homer Bailey, who's been on a rehab assignment in AAA and had been pitching out of the bullpen once, or they moved him to the bullpen for maybe one outing or two, it was announced that he's going to start two more games before his time is up on his rehab assignment, and then he's going to rejoin the Reds starting rotation.
Ah!
Oh, how does this make – I've got some ideas.
It makes absolutely no sense. Other than they've got too much money invested in him. This is a decision I have to believe is coming from ownership. I just have to believe it. I mean, they didn't even – you know, they said they sent him down to Louisville to try the bullpen thing, but they didn't even really try that.
Nope.
Because I don't think he ever – and I think Doug Gray talked about this on his site today or yesterday. They never tried him, you know, back-to-back days or you know, to see how he'd recover or anything like that. Now – I never believed it was going to work anyway, because we talked about this. People had been talking about Bailey in a bullpen for years. And people that know a lot more about pitching and a lot more about Bailey than you or I do have said that it takes him too long to warm up, that he can't come back quick. You know, so I mean, those are just things that if you can't do those, you aren't going to, it ain't going to work in a bullpen. And you and I, I think we talked about this the last time you had me on, is they don't know what the hell to do with Homer Bailey.
I know what to do with him.
Well, yeah, it's easy to say when it isn't your money. And when you don't have the guy writing the checks down the hall who can give you the gate.
If it's, as you say, and that is a distinct possibility, it's not insanity to suggest that it's Bob Castellini calling the shots on this one. If that's as you say, then the amount of hope I have for the future of this franchise drops substantially.
Well, let's pontificate on the possibility that it's not a Castellini decision.
Well, that's even worse.
What logical explanation could there possibly be for it then?
The only thing that I can think of is that it lets them kick the can down the road on giving some bad news to Homer Bailey. The money they're going to pay him, they're going to pay him that whether they let him pitch or not. You know, you can let him pitch poorly, or you can let him not pitch at all. Either way, he's going to get that paycheck. So one thing is they're kicking the can down the road in hopes that, you know, something will happen, or that he's really not fully healthy, and maybe they can just place him, you know, can put him on the disabled list again and then do another rehab assignment later. Or, you know, they're going to put him back in the rotation. They're really going to put him back in the rotation. And if that's the case, and if that's, I don't care whose decision it is, it's a dumb decision, because if Matt Harvey is traded, as he should be, that will open up a spot in the rotation. If they don't fill that spot with Robert Stevenson, it makes, who's doing well in AAA finally, it makes no sense when it comes to this rebuild and what we're trying to learn this year, and it will be It'll be evidence of something. I don't know if it's ownership. I don't know if it's front office. I don't know if it's both together. But
it's evidence of ineptitude in the franchise.
Absolutely. It's evidence that someone is calling the shots that is not making decisions that are in the best interest of this franchise going forward.
The best long-term interest. You could make the argument that it might be the best interest today.
I don't think you can even make that argument.
If somebody believes that Bailey is going to be more successful this year than Stevenson, and they might win two more games, three more games, five more games because of Homer Bailey over Stevenson.
But why would you care?
I'm not trying to justify it. I don't want him to lose 100. And I want them to win ball games. I mean, because that's the point of this whole exercise. But I'm not disagreeing with you. But if Homer Bailey and you said this, I think the last time we were on here, that if that spot in the rotation isn't filled by a young guy after July 31st. This franchise is doesn't have a clue where it's trying to go, and we can make the same argument about what's going on in the infield, and what's going on with Nick Senzel, what went on with Senzel before he got hurt, what they're going to do with Jeanette, and you could even extend it out to Adam Duvall, and why he's still playing every day.
Yeah, my confidence in this front office. Even though I do, I think Dick Williams and Nick Kroll, I think they have a clue. But my confidence in either their ability to make decisions, unfettered by ownership or whatever the issue is, took a big hit during the first month of this season. This team right now, pretty good offense, a young pitching staff that's starting to hold their own a little bit. It's exactly what I predicted before the season when I said that I thought they'd be a 500 team. It's exactly what I said was going to happen. I had no idea of knowing that the front office was just going to completely punt on the first month of the season and refused to bring up Nick Senzel and to have guys like Cliff Pennington and Phil Goslin and Giovanni Gallardo on the roster.
I mean, Gallardo is the one that is absolutely unfathomable.
I agree, but I think having Pennington and Goslin instead of, Blandino and Senzel or even Blandino and Brandon Dixon, I think nobody would have expected those two. Pennington and Goslin or Gallardo to be Gallardo better than what if they'd had Dylan Floro up during that time? Yeah. I mean, it's just my confidence in their ability to really move this rebuild forward took a big hit. If they go forward with this on Homer Bailey, it'll take a further hit. I mean, you can't, Stevenson's way outperforming what Bailey's doing. Bailey's got an ERA almost 6 at AAA. I mean, maybe a pitching coach looks at him that knows more about pitching than I do and says, "Oh no, the numbers aren't fair to him. He's really pitching well right now." That's a possibility. It happens. But I will just if he gets another start for the Reds in his career, I will continue to question the seriousness of this franchise,
or their ability to make the right type of decisions.
Yeah, that's what I worry about. That yep. Even if they want to make the right decisions, they're being hamstrung by something.
Yep.
That elephant in the room.
Yep.
Did you see the Paul Daugherty column earlier in the year where he talked about his meeting with Castellini? He sat and talked with Castellini about everything.
I think I did, but I don't remember it much. If it was in the Inquirer, I probably read it.
Well, the question it wasn't the Inquirer, and the question was put to him something like, are you in there imposing your will on what's happening? Is it a situation where you're calling the shots, you're meddling as an owner? And he said something like, "Well, whenever we're in meetings, when I suggest something or put it forward, nobody's disagreeing with me. We're all in agreement because nobody is taking issue with what I suggest, and so we go forward with that." Now, what do you think of that's like when the boss comes in and says, "Here's what I think we should do something," and nobody's willing to stand up and say, "Okay, maybe not."
Sounds like you got the wrong guys in your front office.
Or that he is meddling and he doesn't realize he's meddling.
Or he's the type of boss that people are afraid to disagree with. And I think I've told you this before. When my wife was a banker, she had to deal with him. And he is not a nice or easy man to deal with when it comes to business. Mm-hmm. I will tell you that.
Right. And you can, and just from those quotes that he had, it made it sound like somebody who is, I don't want to call him a tyrant or anything, but he's the boss and everybody knows he's the boss. And, you know, maybe you get the wrong guys that are not willing to stand up to him. Okay. But I kind of understand that too. If he, you know, who's, are you going to stand up to him at the risk of losing your job? You're going to lose your job anyway if you follow his recommendations, because they're going to lose.
Sooner or later, he's going to fire. Well, everybody in baseball gets fired.
Yeah, but the owner can't get fired. Everyone else is.
That's right. Everybody else is expendable,
except for Walt Jocketty, evidently, who's still somehow in these conversations. I don't understand that one.
I think when he's dead, they'll still have a chair for him at a
in memoriam. Oh goodness. So you
now,
know,
let's talk about this for a minute. The Reds, as you said earlier, the Reds are playing real good baseball.
Yeah.
People are getting a little more excited down at the ball yard, the fan, you know, the normal fan, you know, the regular everyday fan, not the Red Leg Nation type fans, but the...
Oh, we're more excited too, though.
Oh, absolutely. But if the Reds, let's say the Reds trade Scooter. Joe Fan at the ballpark is going to lose his mind.
This is so funny. I don't know if you were listening earlier. I was talking on ESPN radio with James, my buddy James Rapine, just earlier today. And he said, what happens if they trade Scooter Jeanette and Billy Hamilton? And my response was similar to yours. I said, if they do that, you and I, Bill, we may look at it and say, oh, okay, that's a good trade. They brought back a lot that can really fast forward this this rebuild and fill some spots that needed to be filled. And we're like, okay, I get it. I like Scooter and I like Billy, two of my favorite players, but I get it. But you're right. Joe Fan that goes down to the ballpark is going to be out of his mind. And the guys that call into the talk radio shows are going to be out of their mind, aren't they?
Yeah, WLW, will their ratings will go through the roof.
Right.
I don't feel like that much if they trade Billy. Even though he's playing very, very well right now.
He is, but he's still a fan favorite.
Yeah, but...
Don't you say anything bad about Billy Hamilton on my podcast.
Then I got to go.
No, you're right. You're right.
You can make the, and I've said all along that I would not have a problem with trading Scooter Jeanette or signing him for the right numbers.
Yeah, you can make a good decision either way on that one, I think.
Yeah, and you can make a bad decision either way. But if they trade him, they better get somebody that's going to help them next year.
Yes, we're not getting a single-A guy.
Yeah, you know, a low-A, high-A guy, you know, blah, blah, blah. And going back to something you talked about last time, the Reds continue to not move their guys along in the minor leagues.
I know. I don't, they're not listening to me, evidently, are they?
I can't even – anyway. You know, but if they trade Jeanette and they get let's say Jeanette or Iglesias, or Jeanette and Hamilton or Iglesias, and they get a guy that could be a two starter next year.
And for the next 3 or 4 years?
Yeah, and it's got a lot of team, got some team control. Hey, I'm all for it. And then you give Senzel a place to play, you know.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense if they can get something like that. Certainly it's worth it. Well, here's my point as well. Let me know what you think about this, Bill. If they trade those guys, if they trade Scooter, if they trade Billy, if they trade Rosell Iglesias, Joe Fan is going to get upset and he's going to scream. But Scooter Jeanette and Billy Hamilton and Rosell Iglesias are with the Reds now, and people aren't coming to the ballpark. Attendance is way off. If they get good return on those guys and it helps them to win as soon as next year, that's going to get... I'm saying Joe Fan will forgive him really quickly if they make the right moves and the Reds start winning. That's what gets butts into the seats.
Winning solves all the problems.
Absolutely.
And while we're talking about the trade deadline and stuff, explain to me why Duvall is still playing every day.
Because he is an all-star who's had 30 home runs each of the last 2 years.
Or he's being showcased and they're hoping somebody takes him.
Okay. You know, he has...
You notice, when was the last time Jesse Winker finished a game that he played in the outfield?
Never. Which, you know, he's not a great defensive player. I'm willing to concede that, but...
Me too.
I sure like having his bat in the ninth inning of a close game.
Yeah, but when you come back around in the lineup and you've got Adam Duvall hitting in his spot...
Well, Adam Duvall's batting average is over 200 now. Come on, Bill. It's 201.
Yeah, and his on-base percentage is just going over 280.
Let me ask... That's good. Let me ask you this. Yeah, when your on-base percentage is 33 points below Billy Hamilton's...
Yeah.
You might be a redneck. No, I mean, that's the wrong.
That's a different thing.
Yeah, sorry. Let me ask you this trivia question, Bill.
Wait, before you go on, though, but I want to say this. Before the season started, we said that they needed to get Winker 500 to 600 plate appearances. He's on pace for that.
Yeah.
So to be fair, I mean, it's not like he's never playing.
Right, right.
But I don't think he's playing enough for a 24-year-old kid that's doing as well as he's doing.
24-year-old kid with a 123 OPS plus, 23% above the league average. Well, okay, the trivia question I was going to ask you was related to what you just mentioned, actually, because we're on the same wavelength, Bill Lack.
That's scary.
It really is scary. More school for you than for me. No. Which of the Reds' four-headed outfield monster, which of those four players has the most at-bats this season?
Well, I'm sitting here looking at Baseball Reference, so
look at bats. At bats,
Billy does.
No, you're looking at plate appearances.
Oh, you're right. I am.
Adam Duvall has
284. Billy has 283.
Right. So either way, the two least productive offensive outfielders
have the most.
Have the most at bats.
They also have the most plate appearances.
And they have the most. They're within one of each.
They're within one of. Yeah. It's just flip flop.
So the two most productive offensively by far, Scott Schebler has been great. Jesse Winker's been great offensively. Duvall and Hamilton have not, obviously. But yet they have the most plate appearances. And I just, that frustrates me. You're right. Winker is getting an opportunity to play. He's not languishing on the bench. Schebler is getting a chance to play and showing that he deserves a chance to play. But to go back to your original premise, Adam Duvall, I like the guy. I loved watching him in the home run derby. He hits long home runs. But he is a glorified fourth outfielder. And that's what he needs to be. And there's no shame in him being a fourth outfielder who, I'm going to say defensive replacement sometimes, but a pinch hitter, a big power bat late in the game. I don't know why we're still pretending unless they're trying to showcase him, but I don't know that it's working if they're although he has 57 RBIs, so maybe someone will be compelled by that.
And I don't know how much their truth is to what they're saying on the television broadcast. They were talking about teams being interested. We'll wait and see. Hopefully the Reds aren't asking too much for him.
Well, maybe not. I mean, I hope not. Yeah. Although the reason I say fourth outfielder, I don't mind them keeping him around. He's still under team control for another 3 years and very cheap.
I don't disagree if used what right.
If he's a fourth outfielder.
The more I watch Jim Riggleman, the less confident I am that he knows how to use this team. And oh my God, if I wish he'd forget the bunt sign.
Oh my gosh, someone needs to eliminate that bunt sign. He loves a bunt.
But unless the pitcher is batting, why you would ever bunt with Billy Hamilton on first base is beyond me.
And he did it like three times in a week here recently.
I know.
It makes no sense. But let Billy Hamilton steal second.
I want to talk about your guy. I want to talk about how great your guy has been lately. I almost did it.
Billy?
The last 28 days.
Thank you.
346 batting average. 402 on base percentage. 436 slugging, which is even – I mean, he's had an 838 OPS in the last month.
Oh, my. He even started to steal more bases, too.
Yeah, he stole 12 bases.
He is a comic book superhero, Bill.
If Billy Hamilton could put up a 400 on-base percentage for an entire season, he would be an MVP candidate.
Well, you know, and if I had wings, I could fly.
Well, if frogs had wings, they wouldn't hit their little butts when they...
Exactly. But you know what? How about this? Think about this. Let's say you have Peraza turns out to be a decent offensive player at shortstop. And or Senzel takes over shortstop, or Senzel plays third and Suarez moves over to shortstop, or, you know, some combination of that to where you don't have really a weak spot offensively on the infield. And you got Winker and Schebler on your corners. Can't you almost accept this Billy Hamilton with a .314 on base percentage in center field as good as he plays defense? If he's if you're batting him ninth?
Probably yes.
I think so.
I've always said the on-base percentage minimum with Billy that I could suffer through is about .320, but this is close enough. I could deal with it.
Now, of course, the issue with that, and even I have to concede, is he's going to get a little expensive here soon. And you know, how much do you want to pay for that? But just in the abstract, I think you could live with that. You know, plus...
I don't disagree.
Plus, he's a comic book superhero.
Yeah.
He's the best.
Can we move on to something else now before...
Yes.
Before I say something that you won't like.
That's a good idea.
And you fire me.
Right, yeah. I don't know if you can take the cut in pay if I were to fire you, so you better get in line, Bill.
I thought you were going to double my pay.
I was thinking about it, but not anymore. You're mildly criticizing Billy Hamilton, my favorite player. Okay, so what do you want to move on to? I'm going to give you the choice of the next topic here. Why don't you pick something for us?
Oh, well, let's talk about whether the Reds – and again, we're going back to the rebuild thing, but have they learned anything this year for next year?
Well, if you're going to let me answer it first, I think yes. Have we learned as much as I would have liked to have learned? No. But I think we're learning a lot about Luis Castillo and Tyler Mahle and Sal Romano. I think we've learned an awful lot about Jose Peraza. I think we've learned that Scooter Jeanette's not a fluke with the bat, and so you have a better idea of what his value is. I think you've learned that Schebler and Winker can justify being in the conversation for the outfield on the next good Reds team. So, you know, I think we've learned a good bit. What do you think?
I don't disagree with any of that.
You're going to Senzel, aren't you?
But I don't think those were the questions that we had that needed to be. Well, I won't say that. The pitching stuff definitely were questions we needed answers, and we said that all along. But I don't think the Reds had questions about whether Jesse Winker was going to hit. Right. I don't think they had questions about whether Scott Schebler was going to hit.
Really? Yeah, you're.
I think they may have had questions about whether Scott Schebler could play enough center field that their four-headed monster would work.
Mm-hmm.
And he hasn't been great, but he hasn't hurt them. I don't think when the days he's played out there.
No, I agree.
They haven't put him in center field in the big outfields that I remember.
I put Scooter in left and have Schebler in center field every day, to be honest with you.
What about your guy, Billy?
Well, let Billy pitch or something.
I thought that's what Blandino's new calling
was. Yeah, really. Alex Blandino striking out two batters in one inning. Exciting. That was when I was thinking about Senzel coming up to play second. I'd say move Scooter to the left and let Schebler try it at center field because, again, we need to learn more about whether he can handle it. And if he can't, okay, move him back to the corner. But so I think the two things that I wanted to learn, the pitching's one, and I think they've learned a lot. But I also think we don't know what Robert Stevenson is. His numbers in AAA aren't bad, but he's not getting a chance on the big league level. And that's okay for now. I can handle it now. But if the whole second half of the season he's not getting a chance on the big league level, I think you've missed a big opportunity to see if this guy, the former number one pick, can be a guy in the mix.
Who you've touted for years.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, a huge prospect. And it circles back to Homer Bailey. If they take Robert Stevenson's starts and give them to Homer Bailey, I'm going to cancel the podcast.
You lie.
Well, that might make people happy, actually. It'll disappoint the one of you that listen. Hi, Mom.
Oh, both of them.
Right, yeah. So the other thing is I don't think we really learned as much as we should have about Nick Senzel, did we?
I don't think we learned anything about Nick Senzel.
Well, we learned that he's legit.
Who had a question about that? Nobody that I know of that I've read, you know, no sports writer I've read, nobody in the Reds organization. They all knew that this kid was the real deal.
That's fair. That's fair.
But the question going in was, where is he going to play?
And
they played him at spots that he'd already played.
So they didn't learn that.
They didn't learn anything.
And
unless they're going to trade Jeanette or move Jeanette.
But the other thing they didn't learn, because now he's out for the season and they missed an opportunity, golden opportunities, to call him up earlier in the year. They didn't learn, they didn't give him an opportunity to learn at the big league level so that he would be ready to hit the ground running next year when hopefully they will be more competitive. They'll have a chance of being in the mix. I just don't understand the idea of not giving him 4 months or 5 months to, you know, be on a big league roster, learn what it's like to be a major leaguer, learn from the guys that are there, and then hit the ground running next year.
I could have understood if they'd have brought him up for Suarez when Suarez was hurt.
No, I was very loud in saying that.
But once Suarez was healthy again, what would you have done with him?
Well, I would have brought him up and played him at shortstop. But that's why they don't let me make those decisions.
Well, and you and I are assuming that he can play shortstop. And if he could play shortstop, why wasn't he playing shortstop in AAA?
Well, it's good. He played like a game.
He played a game there.
What I would
immediately, and they quickly said, "Well, this is just a one-time thing."
Right.
You know, said, "Well, are we learning something yet? Because God knows we don't want to learn anything."
You know what I would have been doing? I would have gotten him 4 starts a week. Let him spell Peraza a couple times at shortstop. Let him spell Scooter and Suarez at second and third, or you know, some combination wherever you put him. I don't think he has had to be, and some people disagree with this, and it's a reasonable disagreement that if you're going to bring your guy up, he needs to be playing every day. Okay, I think there'd be value in having a rotation, sort of like they did in the outfield, with the infielders. And, you know, you can get him 4 games a week that way and let him get accustomed to the major leagues, and at some point you're either going to trade Scooter and he can play the rest of the year, or, you know, he's going to hit so well that you have to keep him in the lineup. And at the expense of whoever, Peraza, I guess. So, I don't know. I just think it was a year they could have learned so much about him and given him a base to build on for next year when they're really going to need him. And they didn't. They squandered that opportunity, I think.
I understand your point, but I think on a much more logical isn't the right word, but a much more... I don't even know what the word is I'm trying to find, but
meat thermometer is the word you're looking for.
No, it's house of pepper. Okay. But I mean, most people believe that he was going to be a AAA for most of the year. Whether he should have been or not is a different question. But let's assume that the Reds had made the decision that he was going to spend up to September or August or after the trade deadline or something in AAA. They still didn't learn anything by having him at AAA.
Because of where they had him playing.
Exactly. So that's what's frustrating to me was, you know, but I'm assuming the Reds had decided, and I think it's you can make the case because they didn't bring him up when Suarez got hurt, that they weren't going to bring him up until later in the year, if at all, in 2018. But they still wasted the chance to see what positions he could play. You know, throw him out in the outfield for a few days.
Yeah, play him around the field in AAA. What are you hurting?
What was a third baseman when he came to the Reds and turned into a pretty darn good left fielder?
Yeah.
I don't see any reason why Senzel can't.
Well, Kyle Schwarber with the Cubs.
Yep.
You know, they move him around. They move all their guys. Chris Bryant's played in the outfield some. I mean, and at AAA, there's no downside to it. I think I disagree with the assumption that people thought that he was going to be down there all year. I think people thought that he was going to be up after the Reds had secured the rights to an extra year of his on the team control. But I think a lot of people didn't assume that Scooter Jeanette was going to – I think everybody thought he was a fluke. Yeah. So things changed, but still use the opportunity to learn something. They know nothing about Nick Senzel. I think you're right. They know nothing about Nick Senzel going into next year's opening day that they didn't already know this year. And it's a wasted opportunity.
Yep.
How frustrated will you be if he's not on the opening day roster next year?
Not as frustrated as you. You and I have already talked about this off camera.
I'm going to go nuts.
See, to me, if it's just a 2-week thing, it won't bother me. I will understand everybody's frustration with it, but for another year of team control, I absolutely understand it.
Well, I agree. It should be foremost in our eyes whether we can save Bob Castellini a few million dollars.
That's not my point, but my point is that's what's going to happen, and it doesn't bother me.
it bothers me. If they are serious about competing, have the best 25 guys here. Period. Okay. We'll argue about that next opening day when he's not on the...
Nobody does that.
Yeah. Well, I don't care. what do I care about that? I would have the best 25 guys here, whether that means Senzel's on the opening day roster, whether it means that they've traded for Chris Archer and he's here, whether they've signed Manny Machado, whether they've gone out and gotten that one big pitcher that I really think they need to get. Not Kershaw. What's his name? Oh, yeah. Luis Alberto Bonilla.
He's available, isn't he?
I don't know. His Korean team may not let him go.
Have you been keeping up on his stats? How's he doing over there?
Oh, yeah. Let's not talk about it. He's better, than his,
good,
he's better than his stats show.
Yeah, so am I.
Yeah, me too. But I am going to be upset on opening day, and we'll save this for opening day next year when we'll both be railing. I'll be railing about it, and you'll be trying to calm me down because I just, from my perspective, I don't care about Bob Castellini's money. He has money. He's got a $1 billion franchise here, $1 billion plus that he paid, you know, 200 and some million for, you know, that the ownership group did. I can't get concerned about a couple million, to be honest with you, if they're going to have to pay extra for him later. And if he justifies sticking around, the Reds want him to stick around that last year, then they're going to want to sign him to a long-term deal anyway, and that last year is not going to mean as much. So they're going to try to buy it out. So I just, I don't like it. It's cynical. And have I mentioned I don't like it?
I would think you'd get tired of being wrong.
Oh, I'm never wrong. No one ever tells me I'm wrong.
One more thing before we go.
Yeah.
And I haven't seen this too much lately, but this talk of taking the interim off of Riggleman.
Do we have to mention that?
Just stop.
Well,
if Jim Riggleman's the manager of this team next year, once again, I will say they've given up.
Or they're not serious about putting the best team
yeah.
on the field.
And
which
Billy
Hatch,
the third base coach, the same thing. He is... Oh, my God, he's atrocious.
No, seriously, tell me what you think about Billy Hatcher as third base
coach. I think Billy is probably a very nice, a very good man, and probably a good coach.
World Series hero.
But a terrible third base coach. Mm. Just horrendous.
I guess. I don't know how to compare him to other third base coaches, because maybe other teams see this, and we just don't follow him as well.
He's Alex Grammas, so I'll tell you that.
Oh, there you go. About Riggleman, I think even if you're the world's biggest Jim Riggleman fan, and I'm sure there's one of those out there. I don't know. But
his wife, his kids.
Maybe, you know. But even if you're the biggest fan and you think he deserves to be the guy, I think you got to – I'm comforted by the fact that Director of Baseball Ops, Dick Williams, has said repeatedly now and in recent days that they're going to conduct this full-scale search in the offseason for a manager, which they should do. And Riggleman, I don't have any problem with Riggleman being one of those candidates for that. No problem at all, because I don't think he's going to come out of it looking very good.
I don't care if you're a candidate.
Well, I should be a candidate.
No, you want the GM job.
I don't know. I'd like to put on those tight pants and sit in the dugout every day.
You know what? You got all that money. Why don't you buy the team and you can pull a Ted Turner?
Oh, all that fancy podcast money. We'll spend that on the
right. All that big podcast money.
Oh man, you're gonna have to be my third base coach.
I want to be bench coach. I don't want to have to go out there.
You don't want to walk out there in those tight pants in front of everyone.
Well, the other thing is this: one of my problems with the Reds' current coaching staff is all the guys that they brought up when they fired Price are older than I am.
Yeah. It just is this the team?
They need to go a little younger with their coaching staff.
Well, that's something I said to Rapine, James Rapine, earlier when I was talking to him on ESPN 1530. I think that, you know, if they do a full-scale search like they haven't done since Bob Boone was the last one, that last managerial search they had where they interviewed more than one person, which is just – it's a ridiculous way for a $1 billion corporation to do business. But
they didn't do that when they hired Dusty?
No. He was the only candidate they interviewed. And Dick Williams said that in an interview with Buster Olney, I think, this week of ESPN. So if they go through a full-scale rebuild with a full-scale managerial search with Riggleman as one of the candidates, and if Riggleman really emerges from that search as the best available candidate, well, okay, give him the job. I can't imagine that he will be the best available candidate for that job, and I think they will end up with somebody younger, somebody, because that's the trend across baseball, someone that's younger and someone that is open to listening to what the stat guys say. I really think that's who they'll end up with, and maybe I'm having too much confidence in the front office. Hiring Jim Riggleman, who has a losing record as a major league manager, who's what, in his, I don't know, late 50s, 60s, I don't know how old he is, but he's, you know, he's not really the next generation. That will really, I'm like you, that'll be sort of an inflection point.
The other thing I think will be a telling point is how much money they're willing to pay a manager.
Well, that's why I think it'll be sort of a young hotshot guy.
If they go cheap, they'll get somebody like Riggleman. If he's a young up-and-comer, he's going to cost a little bit of money.
Maybe not. Maybe not if he's young.
Maybe. Well, it depends. I mean, if he's coming off somebody else's staff where he's going to have opportunities, and if they pluck him out of the minor leagues or something, maybe. But, you know, if they're not going to get a Girardi or somebody like that cheap.
No, absolutely not. I'll tell you who I think they should get. Let me give you a name. Here's who I think they should get. Get ready to agree with me, as you usually do.
Are you going to tell me somebody I don't even know who they are?
No, you know this person.
Okay.
A legend in franchise history. One of the greatest infielders this franchise has ever seen.
Chris Sabo.
No, I'm talking, of course, about Ray Knight.
Oh. Bring back Ray Knight.
Let's start the hashtag. Hash Brown, bring back Ray Knight.
Yeah, because that worked so well the first time.
Oh, it worked great. What do you think? Ray Knight? Worst Reds manager of your lifetime? Who's the worst Reds manager of your lifetime?
Vern Rapp.
Boy, you went deep into the archives for 1983. Vern Rapp.
It's easy. I mean, I got that quick, didn't I?
You did. You were on top of it. You didn't even know that question was coming. Yep. Worse than Bob Boone or Ray Knight?
Yep.
I don't know. Boone, I think it's Boone for me.
Boone was terrible, but Knight was. I think Rapp was worse.
Okay.
You know who's the most underrated manager, in my opinion? It was John McNamara.
He was underrated. He got a bad rap because he followed the legend.
Yep.
Do you think that McNamara, if we exclude Sparky Anderson, do you think McNamara is the best Reds manager since Sparky, let's say?
No, McKeon.
Really? That's not who I would say. I think McKeon's up there.
Actually, probably Davey Johnson.
That's who I would say, Davey Johnson.
Lou, you know.
Yeah, Lou's great.
But I'll tell you what, I think McKeon's underrated as a Reds manager.
I agree.
They played pretty good ball for McKeon.
And one thing,
without a lot of talent.
No, and he was like sort of the forerunner of getting creative with your bullpen. People didn't do that back then.
Yep.
The Scott Williamsons of the world.
The thing, people talk about the bullpen stuff, but, you know, the creativeness with the bullpen. And look at the Big Red Machine. Look what Sparky did with the bullpen.
Oh, yeah. Hey, that Big Red Machine was pretty good.
They were all right. They were fun to watch, huh?
Davey Johnson, and we've gone completely off the rails here, but Davey Johnson, I do think he, if Marge Schott hadn't run him out of town because he was living with his girlfriend instead of getting married to her, yep. If Marge hadn't run him out of town, I think the Reds win a World Series in the mid-90s.
Wouldn't surprise me.
I mean, you know, they were in the National Championship Series in 95 under Davey, and he was just, that's the last Reds manager that I really, McKeon. Davey's the last one I completely agree with just about everything he did. I mean, that guy was great.
Yep. He was a really good manager.
He's got an autobiography out from Triumph Books. There's another book from Triumph Books that's out on the shelves. Have you read the other one I'm talking about, Bill?
These two guys wrote it. I can't remember their names.
The Big 50, The Men and Moments That Made the Cincinnati Reds by Chad Dotson and Chris Garber. I'm writing his coattails, but anyway, go out and buy it.
Well, speaking of, you mentioned the book, made me think about you guys doing your book signing down at the Hall of Fame, which you said really, 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 really well.
That was great.
And that's really cool. And the Hall of Fame is coming up, and I'm going to be at the ballpark that day.
Oh, yeah?
Very excited about that. And they're putting two of our big guys, two of our favorites.
Absolutely.
And friend of Red Leg Nation, Freddie Norman.
Who has been on the podcast. You interviewed him, a memorable interview that I'm going to repost it.
I did a fun interview with Freddie Norman. Well, we had to break. It was so long, we had to break it into two, I think.
Yeah, I'm going to post both of those.
It was a great interview. I mean, and if you want to see somebody that came to a team and made an impact
immediately,
yeah, I think he threw three shutouts.
Yeah, something like that. I remember talking about it at that time.
It was either two and he got into the ninth inning against the Dodgers, and Say hit a home run of the third, or he hit, or it was three, and that happened in the fourth. I think he threw two shutouts in his first two starts for the Reds, and then he had a shutout in the ninth when Ron Say hit a home run off of him, and they still won. I mean, when he came over to the Reds, he immediately made an impact on the rotation, and he was a really good pitcher for the Reds.
And talk about underrated. People don't know Fred Norman.
Nope.
It's a shame.
Little guy that threw a screwball.
Yeah.
And nobody throws a screwball anymore.
Well, I'm gonna repost that at Red Leg Nation. I'm also gonna throw those back into the podcast feed as well. If you're subscribed to the podcast, you'll get to hear those Freddie Norman interviews, because they're fantastic. So
and our other guy, yes. Adam Dunn, who is both your and my one of my all time favorite Reds.
Way up there, absolutely.
I love the way he hit. I love the sense of humor. I love the fact that he didn't take himself too seriously. And I love the fact that when you talk to somebody like John Fay or some of these people that are in the clubhouse, they said he never ducked. When he had a bad game, he was standing in front of his locker and answered every question. When he had a good game, he was standing in front of his locker. That's a man.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, Adam Dunn is one of he will always be one of my favorite Cincinnati Reds. Also, I think underrated by a pretty big segment of Reds fans.
You and I have talked. We've talked about that at length. Why we think that is.
Yeah, we could go back to the archives from like the first 50 episodes of the podcast, and you and I are talking about that constantly. Yeah.
Yeah, there was usually some Adam Dunn content in there.
Right. Absolutely, because he's a Reds Hall of Famer. I mean, he's a great career. And actually, if you go out and pick up Cincinnati Magazine this month. I don't know if you've seen this yet, Bill. You need to run out and grab one as soon as we're finished with this podcast, if you haven't. But they're running an excerpt from the Big 50, Cincinnati Reds, in there. And it's our chapter on Adam Dunn, because, I couldn't write a book about the Reds without having a chapter about Adam Dunn. And so they're running that chapter as an excerpt for leading up to his Hall of Fame induction.
They did a beautiful version, huh? I will have to pick that up.
Yeah, they did a beautiful job with the layout, and they had some artwork with it, and just really appreciate it. I love those guys at Cincinnati Magazine. They've been really good to me, and really nice to publish that excerpt for me, and I'm really happy with how that turned out. But it's the Dunn chapter, and it's I love that guy. So excited for and Dave Bristol, another guy that's underrated, is also getting inducted.
I was going to say we can't sign off here without talking about Dave Bristol.
Absolutely.
Without many people that were around at that time would tell you there wouldn't have been a big Red machine without Dave Bristol.
Yeah. John Ring is one of our writers at Red Leg Nation, and he does a lot of historical stuff. And he's running a series about the 1968 team right now, a season-long series. And he also is doing some pieces where he's reached out to old Reds and to talk about Freddie Norman and Dave Bristol specifically leading up to the Hall of Fame. And those pieces will be coming at Red Leg Nation over the next few weeks. But he talked to Pete Rose, he talked to a bunch of guys, and he says, you will not believe how complimentary guys like Pete Rose were about Bristol and Norman. Just nothing but great things to say. And especially Bristol, who, I guess he wasn't Pete Rose's first manager, was he?
No, Fred Hutchinson was his.
Actually, he came
in the big leagues, you mean, or in minor leagues?
In the big leagues. Oh, yeah, but Bristol, that's what it was. Bristol had him in the minor leagues too, right?
I think Bristol had him in the minor leagues, but Hutchinson was his first manager in the big leagues.
Yeah, Bristol was Johnny Bench's first manager. But Bristol was a really good manager who just, a little bit before his time, and so Sparky got a lot of the credit for the Big Red Machine. But Bristol had a hand in that, absolutely.
Sparky was a pretty good manager.
Though. Sparky was all right. I mean, he was probably also underrated, frankly, and no one underrates Sparky. Fantastic. It's funny, Sparky said that about Johnny Bench when someone compared to Thurman Munson, the Yankees catcher, Thurman Munson. Don't
76 series, yeah.
Yeah. Don't embarrass any catcher by comparing them to John Bench. Well, let's not embarrass anyone by comparing them to Sparky, because he's the best.
Well, speaking of John, there's an article in Sports Illustrated. It was online last week. They did a really interesting article about Johnny Bench now at 70, I think he is. And he has two fairly young kids. He's a single dad. So it was a very interesting article. If you haven't read it, go out and find Sports Illustrated online and see if it's still there. It's a good read.
It's still there because you texted me last week or whenever it was and mentioned that, and I pulled it up. I haven't actually read it yet, but I've got it pulled up in one of my browser windows here. So I'll be happy to read that. What do you think, Bill? If we,
I think we beat it to death today.
Have we beat it to death? We tend to do that, don't we?
Yeah, we do.
You know, I've been going through and trying to put together the history of Red Leg Nation Radio, and here we are, 217 episodes in, and I've been sort of reliving some of the old ones, and I'm going to repost some of the old ones, and I found some fun ones from the past. We've had a really good time with this, and I found one I didn't remember. You interviewed Jesse Winker when he was like in Dayton, I guess.
Yeah, I think he was in Dayton. I had talked to him. I think I talked to him when I was up at the ballpark one night, or emailed him or something. I can't remember how I even got in touch with him. And he was kind enough to come on, and he's always said he'd come back. I mean, I've still got his phone number somewhere. And he was a very nice, you know, very nice young man, and you could tell he had his eye on the ball. It's a good interview to read. We were very lucky in meeting a lot of nice people up there at Dayton. Jesse, Tucker, Devin Mazzaracco, Jay Bruce.
Jay Bruce, yeah.
And plus some of our other spotlight guys that never made the big leagues, Matt Klinker and Logan Parker and a number of others.
Right, yeah. No, that's fantastic. So I'm going to be posting some excerpts from at redlegnation.com of some of the older episodes, and just to help some of you that are newer to the podcast see. We've had a pretty good run here, Bill, and it's been a lot of fun, hasn't it?
Yeah. When was the first one?
2007.
Holy cow.
2007, it was an interview that you did with Thomas Pawley, who was a res minor leaguer at that time.
I listened to that one after you told me about it.
Yeah. And then
I was in his house down in Sarasota. I went over and met him at his house.
Yeah. And that was the first episode. It's a little different. And the second one was a really fun one that still holds up pretty well, was when we went to the Reds Hall of Fame, right after they'd opened the Reds Hall of Fame, and talked with Greg Rhodes, team historian. At that time, I think he was running the Hall of Fame. And yeah. That was a fun episode too.
Yes, it was. You told me again. That's another one you reminded me of, and I didn't realize that was that early. I thought we were further along than that. But that was a great. Greg's a great guy.
Gosh,
he likes to talk as much as you and I do.
And that's saying something because we can't stop. Yeah, no. So a lot of fun ones, and Freddie Norman. You talked about. I mean, you know, Tom Browning. We've had Barry Larkin on the podcast. It's been a fun.
Jim Maloney.
Oh, my gosh. Yes, absolutely. So
that was a great one. And, the one with Browning, though, the one with Browning still amazes me. His memory of his first start in the big leagues. He remembered like seven of the eight starters, and there weren't many household names in that group.
Right.
I was shocked.
That was a good one. So you can find all those archives at redlegnation.com. Just click the RN podcast link up at the top left and you'll find. But there's just so many fun ones. The one that got away that I still want, you just mentioned Johnny Bench, but I actually had we had a time set up that he was supposed to call in, and we were going to do a podcast or an interview. It was going to be a short one probably, but I was going to get a chance to talk to Johnny Bench. And then something happened. His plane was delayed. I don't remember what it was. It was right around the All-Star game in Cincinnati. I think it was a Cincinnati All-Star game. Actually, it may have been a different All-Star game, but it was right around the All-Star game, and never got to reconnect for that one. That was that's still on the bucket list, I guess, but we've got a few of those, right?
I would like to get Dave Parker.
I knew that's who you were going to mention. Oh, it'd be a great
now,
interview.
I know that Dave is suffering with some Parkinson's, and I don't know how that's affected his speech. But if he could at all, if he'd be willing, I would sure love to sit down and talk to Dave Parker about his career, both before and with the Reds.
Yeah, what a career and what a life.
I mean, he was the Reds' first big free agent signing.
Yeah, and a successful one, huge one.
And boy, was he a heck of a player when he was playing for the Reds. A comeback story.
And then who'd they trade him for? Do you remember?
Was that the Jose Rijo trade?
Jose Rijo. Jose Rijo and Tim Bertzis.
Was it just for Parker? Or did somebody go with Parker?
I think it was just Parker. I think.
Was it? And he still had a couple of good years left out in Oakland, if I remember right.
Oh yeah, he was a designated hitter out there and still produced. So yeah, so we got a lot of time left on this. We're going to keep doing this at least every week, and so we've had a fun run. I had a really good time going back and looking at all the times that you and I have gotten together specifically, and said a lot of dumb things, and you know, had a lot of fun doing it.
Well, that's my job, saying dumb things.
And you're very, very good at it, Bill.
I wake at night thinking of dumb things to say.
And I hope you're writing some of those down so you can say them in future episodes of Red Leg Nation Radio. Thanks to everyone who's downloaded and listened. I say it all the time, and I do mean it. I don't know why you got so many things you can do with your time and why you would download and listen to us ramble. it baffles me, and it makes me so appreciative of you guys. And I didn't really realize until recently with these book signings how many of you are actually out there. I mean, I see see the numbers, but it didn't really hit with me until you guys were coming out to the book signings and saying hi. And I just, every single one of you did that. Very special to me, and I really appreciate that. Keep listening. Tell your friends about us. Subscribe. If you haven't subscribed yet, go subscribe at iTunes, Stitcher, wherever you find your podcast. You'll find Red Leg Nation Radio. We keep moving up the charts at iTunes, so if you leave a rating for us, give us a 5-star rating if you feel like that's the appropriate thing to do. If you don't think we're a 5-star podcast, keep your mouth shut. I'm at Red Leg Nation.
Your fingers off the keyboard.
Absolutely. We're at RedLegNation.com every single day. We have been since 2005, and we're going to keep going at RedLegNation.com as long as we can. And you can follow at Red Leg Nation on Twitter. I'm at Dotson C. You don't hang out much on Twitter anymore, do you, Bill?
I don't do much Twittering.
At Bill Red Leg N is his handle if you want to go follow Bill. And again, come to Red Leg Nation every day. Bill, man, it's so much fun talking to you every time, and this time was particularly spectacular. Thank you so much.
It's always a good time, my friend. I will talk to you soon, I'm sure.
Can't wait. For Bill Lack. For Bill Lack and Lisa Alberto Bonilla, this is Chad Dotson saying so long, everyone.
Thanks for listening to Red Leg Nation Radio from RedLegNation.com. Subscribe to Red Leg Nation Radio on iTunes or through your favorite podcast app. And join us for discussion of all things Reds at RedLegNation.com. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
Ever tried reading while jogging, cooking, or even juggling flaming torches? Yeah, doesn't end well. But with audiobooks.com, you can conquer books without the circus act. Dive into over 450,000 titles, including more than 10,000 free ones. Get hooked on a bestseller, find your next obsession, or finally read that classic you've been avoiding since high school. And here's the inside scoop. Sign up today for a free 30-day trial and snag your first 3 audiobooks on the house. Sign up for your free trial at audiobooks.com/podcastfree today. That's audiobooks.com/podcastfree.